If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking. State Representative-elect Elizabeth Fuchs is hardly a novice to Jefferson City. She has spent over a decade in the Missouri Capitol advocating for the state's LGBTQ community. But on the latest episode of Politically Speaking, Fuchs explains why she decided to get off the sidelines and into the arena by successfully running for the state's 80th District House seat. The St. Louis Democrat also explains what she expects when the legislature gavels back into session early next year. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, the definitive show about Missouri politics.
My promise to St. Louis was that I would do the absolute most for each and every person, starting with those who have the very least.
What I wanted to do was look and see what other states are doing.
We have to be willing to change those laws, that they are balanced and they affect everybody equally.
As somebody that grew up in the St. Louis area, in North St. Louis County, I didn't know any lawyers growing up.
We got to find long-term solutions to make government better, but also to be able to provide services to people.
I don't want to leave that federal money that we've been leaving all these years on the table.
We need to be spending this money to take care of Missourians.
I thought we accomplished a lot this year, but a lot more needs to be done.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, St. Louis Public Radio political correspondent Jason Rosenbaum, joining us from glorious and beautiful mid-Missouri. She covers all things state government and state politics for St. Louis Public Radio.
Sarah Kellogg.
And joining me in studio, she is the representative-elect for the glorious and beautiful 80th District in the House.
Elizabeth Fuchs.
Welcome to Politically Speaking. I know that you ran for this post specifically so you could come on this show.
I did.
This is going to be a running gag for all of our new legislators. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you were doing before you decided to run for office.
Well, thank you so much for having me today to talk with you. I am delighted to be here and a big fan of both of you and all the work you do in Jefferson City. Thank you for telling the stories about what we're doing there. Why did I run for office? So it's time. It's time to have really loud, unapologetic queer leadership in our state. I am looking forward to carrying the baton from my predecessors and all of the people who have come before me. I know I stand on some pretty broad LGBTQ shoulders, and I'm grateful to those people who came before. And, you know, my kind of introduction to government and policy comes from my family. And when I was a little kid, we lost my uncle to AIDS in 1990. And after that, I kind of learned what government inaction or overreach can look like, how that translates to policy. And that, I believe, is my origin story of discovering the connection between being able to live your best life and how government policy can interrupt that.
You worked for a number of groups advocating for the LGBTQ community, including PROMO and the Metro Trans Umbrella Group. You mentioned on your website that you, quote, found your people after you went to Novak's Bar and Grill for the first time. Beyond kind of elaborating on that, if somebody was curious about what the LGBTQ community is specifically in St. Louis, like, what would be your description about the people that you found?
Some of the best people in the world. I know I'm biased. I am a member of the community. But it's true. When I went into Novak's, it was 2000. Right now it's a tattoo shop. The original Novak's is a tattoo parlor on Manchester. And I, like I said, I grew up Catholic. I grew up St. Louis. South County is kind of where I was born and raised. And I didn't really, you know, I came out right after high school, and I didn't really have an LGBTQ community or queer friends. So when I walked into Novax for the first time on a blind date in the year 2000, I got up, sang some karaoke, and the bartender, who is no longer with us, I like to refer to him as my fairy godfather, Donnie Tate, was like, "Oh my gosh, you should work here." And I, you know, gave me an application and I filled it out. And that's kind of how I started building my rapport and my connections to our community, was as their bartender. So even though I wasn't a social worker at the time, I was a community social worker helping people access resources. And so I would say that the St. Louis or larger LGBTQ community here in Missouri is, they are a fighting group of people, survivors, deeply concerned about the community that they exist in and their futures.
Well, you mentioned, I think, on your website, you weren't even sure you were going to run for this seat until the passage of legislation in 2023 banning most gender-affirming care for minors and also banning payment for transgender people on Medicaid and for prisoners. Mm-hmm. How did that 2023 moment spur you to decide to run for this seat?
I'd always wondered what a large, I called it like a gathering or a picnic or a potluck on the front lawn of the Capitol would look like. And thanks to our colleagues on the other side of the aisle, we had a protest in 2023, in March of 2023. And there was about 800 LGBTQ community members and family and allies that gathered there in the lawn. And I stood next to Representative Meredith. And I'm looking at all these folks, and we're thinking about this legislation that's going to pass, because we hadn't passed the legislation yet. And I thought, what's going to happen? All of you are terming out. You're all going to turn out of the House. Our champions who have been working to defend equality for the last 8 years, we're going to lose a large portion of those folks from the legislature. And that's when I started to think, could I come down here? What if I did this? What if I came down here? And at the time, it was just a little seed that had planted. And then in October of 2023, so we had passed SB 39 and 49. They became law in August of 2023. And then in October of 2023, the community had a series of suicides. We had about three in the community. And my own connection to suicide and my uncle's death, you know, he did complete suicide. The connection to policy, lack of HIV policy, lack of talking about, you know, AIDS, and just the connection to me was staggering, how the template looks the same for marginalized populations. They're using what feels like the same playbook from the 80s to erase the trans community here in Missouri, and as a fierce accomplice to the trans community, I was like, I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna run. I feel a tremendous amount of privilege as a cis person, someone who doesn't identify as trans, but who is very much part of the queer community. And I want to leverage that privilege to speak up for the voices that not only aren't here anymore because maybe they took their lives, but because maybe they moved. We've lost so many families from Missouri, so many. So that was, and you know, I struggle to not go into that whole like white savior thing, and you know, but at the same time, I've been in that building working for the last 10 years. I'm familiar with the games, with the attacks, and I felt like it was my time and part of my calling.
So now that you are elected, explain what the orientation process has been like so far. What have you learned that you didn't know going in?
How much time do we have? The orientation process. First, can I give a shout out to the House staff? I've done a lot of orientation and onboarding in my career, and the level of detail and the pride that they take in making sure that we have everything we need to be successful, it was really, I don't know, it was powerful. And I'm very grateful to all the House staff, Terry and Dana, and everybody who helped onboard us. So that was a big lift. I mean, huge binders full of information, 3 days worth of, you know, 10-hour days, 10 to 12-hour days of information, everything. For my students, I break things into mission and mechanics. So mission, who are we now as elected officials? How do you move from being a candidate to an actual elected official? What does it look like to sponsor legislation? How does the process work? To mechanics, what is the health insurance? How's payroll work? You know, we had mock floor sessions where we were in mock hearings and on the floor. And I mean, everything was so well scripted. I will mention that out of the 163 members of the House, 54, there are 54 new freshmen. And that's both Republican and Democrats, which makes a large part of the House were new. And also, that's a good number when you're vote counting. So I think we have a responsibility to build community across the aisle. And that is something that I know several of us are really invested in. As we sit in orientation, there's no aisle. When we're on the buses for freshman bus tour, which is in the first 2 weeks of December, there's an aisle on the bus, right? But it's not like left or right. So we're tasked with building rapport outside of the House right now. And I'm hoping that proves fruitful.
Yeah, that is a pretty large freshman class on both sides of the aisle. What have been your early impressions of your colleagues?
There is a very, very diverse, reason. There are lots of different reasons why people run for office. That is one of the biggest takeaways. There are a lot of different opinions when it comes to what this job is and how to implement it. I will say, as somebody who really, really looks to remove or eliminate deeply held religious beliefs from policy, I am a little concerned with how much religious extremism I might have heard already. And so to me, and I'll just say for example, when we had a small group conversation about values, because we're talking about what our values are and how our values impact our ability to make good policy or implement policy once made. And so we're having this small group discussion, and one of my new colleagues says that his values are the Bible and that I value the Bible and what the Bible says. Those are my values. And as somebody who is, I really believe in that separation of church and state, I immediately get a little like, you know, like my spidey senses, the hairs on the back of my neck, and I get like, well, what's my response to this? Because I have to be very careful because we just met, you know, like we're building relationships. And so when it got to me, I said, as a social worker, you know, we really value meeting people where they are. And, you know, that to me is how I'm going to approach this work, is meeting people where they are. Just Friday, I was over at my aunt and uncle's house, and my aunt and uncle feel very differently about the world than I do. And I believe they are loving, kind, good people, and also feel very differently about things. And so I'm going to try my best to approach my new colleagues in that same way. Like, we feel very differently about things, and my hope is at the end of the day, we want what's best for Missourians, but I just don't know if they understand who the Missourians are that I serve. And so I hope to help them understand better what's best for them. And some of their policies aren't.
Democrats will remain in the super minority for the next 2 years. But, you know, in the House, Democrats under outgoing leader Crystal Quaid managed to make an impact, especially on budgetary matters. How confident are you about repeating this, you know, success under new leadership in the new year?
I believe we will continue to carry on that Crystal Quaid legacy. I am a big fan of Crystal's. I've watched Crystal's leadership in the House for the last 6 years. I've watched the organizing, the coalition building, the bridge building to the other side. You know, what people see in the media a lot of times are the big, you know, big sound bites, maybe the bigger escalations or the bigger contentious conversations. What mostly happens there are these one-on-one conversations where we are talking to each other as people. And that is something that I think Crystal exceeded, was her ability to build rapport with individuals and how that then influenced the group when it came to voting. The budget, from what I've heard, is going to start to get a little more challenging just because of loss of revenue for the state. I hope if, you know, I don't know that I'll be on budget. I don't necessarily know that's where my strengths lie, but if that's where I'm called to serve, you know, if Minority Floor Leader Ani decides that that's, you know, the best spot for me, then of course that's where I'm going to try to move money around for the people. And that is one of the places that we can make a huge influence in the state is through the budget. But I don't know if that's where I'll be. I really think we can continue this momentum, especially with the HDC, like our House caucus, and I believe that we'll still continue to build that momentum.
And for our listeners, when you say Minority Leader Ani, you're referring to Representative Ashley Ani, who is a Democrat in the Kansas City area. One of the things that we're going to be watching is how incoming House Speaker John Patterson interacts with the more conservative flank of his caucus. He's currently facing a surprise challenge from Representative Justin Sparks. Do you think that Patterson is going to have trouble holding his caucus together, given that he's voted against some of their bigger priorities in the past?
That was a really good question. My my initial thought is, well, I guess we'll wait and see. I really think it's gonna. This is how Speaker Patterson is able to manage the floor, I believe, is going to. It's going to have like, however Governor-elect Kehoe decides to engage with some of the larger, I think, federal or presidential energy, like whatever that, there's going to be like this ripple effect, like this trickle down from like however the Trump administration decides that the states have to behave. And if Governor Kehoe is going to become the one who implements that energy from the top, and then how will Speaker Patterson have to comply or not comply? I believe there's going to be lots of tension and dysfunction in that energy and how Speaker Patterson will be able to manage the kind of larger divide in that Republican caucus. I'm not sure.
We'll be right back after this quick break with State Representative-elect Elizabeth Fuchs.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.
And we're back on Politically Speaking with State Representative-elect Elizabeth Fuchs. She is a Democrat who represents part of St. Louis City. By the way, we didn't ask, like, what neighborhoods are you going to represent when you get sworn in January?
Oh, yeah. So I like to say I'm Lily for the Lou, the lady from 80. And if you start in Tower Grove Park, so situate yourself in Tower Grove Park. That's the northernmost boundary of the district. And then start heading south. So we're Tower Grove, a little bit of Tower Grove East, Bevo, Dutchtown, Northampton, a little Southampton, Southwest Gardens, and then Tower Grove South and Tower Grove Heights.
One of the key priorities of incoming Governor Mike Keogh is placing a gubernatorial board in charge of the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department. Currently, it's basically run by the mayor's office. It's a little convoluted, but like the way the 2012 initiative was structured, like the Department of Safety Director oversees the police department, but that's a mayoral appointee. So I think we can just safely say it's run by the mayor's office. Here is Keogh talking about this issue earlier this month.
Well, it seemed to have worked better before. I think that's the luxury we have in that option, is that the city specifically was over that for, you know, decades. And we saw a different result. And it also kind of takes the partisan piece of politics out of the police department. Public safety should never really be partisan. It should be about what's best for citizens. And I believe that model seems to work better. Many people in the business community in St. Louis that are the folks that want to invest capital to expand specifically to downtown St. Louis think that's a better option. The mayor obviously does not. I've talked to her about that, and I respect her opinion. But we need to figure out a way to move forward to increase the safety in the region and the perception, quite honestly, to potential investors and their employees and customers that St. Louis is open for a business, it's a safe place, and it's a place we want to continue to be a shining star for our state.
That is Governor-elect Mike Keogh talking with me earlier this month about his support for reestablishing a gubernatorial board over the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department. What's your response to what he had to say?
When listening to Governor-elect Keogh, I think I'm a little confused over the argument to remove partisanship, and then it's a gubernatorial appointed board, so wouldn't that be partisan if the governor is electing? And if the governor wasn't elected by the people of the city of St. Louis, then is that partisan? Like, I just struggle to find the reasoning there, if that's the reasoning. But I hope to work closely with Governor Keogh. There is something in our history that I struggle with when looking at the current mayor of the city of St. Louis. We have a Black woman, the first Black woman elected to the mayor's office in the city of St. Louis. Did we try to take local control when Lyda Crewson was mayor?
No.
Did we try to take local control when Frances Slate? No. In fact, we actually got control back. So is it racism? Like, what are we trying to accomplish?
Can I bring
here
up another fact that,
please,
often gets underplayed? Slay and Crewson were either like financially supported or supported things by Rex Singfeld.
Yeah.
Rex Singfeld was the person that brought local control to St. Louis. He bankrolled that campaign, for better or for worse. I don't think Tashara Jones is seen as a Rex Singfeld person, though I do know that the lobbyists who are associated with Mr. Singfeld are very much opposed to overturning like what he helped put in place.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I bring that up just because, like, it is noticeable, like, they didn't try to undo it
right
during those two mayoral administrations.
Right.
But, like, continue.
I mean, that's an excellent point. So that's my, my thinking. How come now? And for what reason? Because the statistics are showing that we have actually done a pretty good job during the during Tashara's administration, of reducing crime in the city of St. Louis. And so I really wonder the motivation.
What about having a board of police commissioners that is appointed by the mayor, similar to like what's in St. Louis County? Like, I live in St. Louis County. The St. Louis County Police Department is obviously not immaculate, and it has had its problems, but is seen as a pretty well-run police department, and a lot of people want to work there, probably because the pay is better, and, you know, there are some other aspects that are attractive. Would that be a possible compromise? Because then the mayor's office would still determine who oversees the board, but there would be kind of this layer of separation that is not there right now. As a former county resident, I'm sure you know this arrangement pretty well. So I'd like you to opine on that.
I wonder what the city police want. You know, like, that is...
Well, they want state control. Like, it's pretty obvious. Like, they don't want to be under local control anymore.
And I wonder if that is kind of the so what you're saying, if that's the compromise that is willing to satisfy both parties.
I don't know. That's a good question. Again, like, there's nothing stopping the mayor from telling the board members to do something mm-hmm. and them just doing it. Mm-hmm. Like, let's be clear. Like, Sam Page probably does that all the time. It's frowned upon, but I don't think it's illegal under the way it's set up. But again, I'm just looking at outcomes, and I don't think the St. Louis County Police Department is a poorly run police mm-hmm. department. I'm not trying to say St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department is poorly run, but it clearly has had some issues with functionality and operations mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. that kind of go beyond statistics. So that's why I'm bringing that up, not only because maybe that's the middle ground, but because it could be something that everybody is genuinely okay with. Not thrilled about, but okay with.
And isn't that how good policy actually is made? When everybody's not super thrilled about something, but everybody gets a little something done. I mean, really, that is what compromise looks like. That's how we move forward, is that there's a little, somebody gives over here and somebody gives over there, and then you get what you have at the end of the day. I think that's good policy.
You've mentioned that public safety is a major part of your platform. What are some things that you think the legislature could pass that would make a tangible difference?
I was looking at legislation around domestic violence, intimate partner violence, and guns, right? Like, why can't we pass a ban on, if you've had a domestic violence charge, you've been prosecuted, you've been charged with domestic violence, why can you still access a weapon? We know that and I'm not going to even try to get the statistic right because I don't have it in front of me, but there's a large correlation between homicides, domestic violence, and access to weapons, to guns. And so that is something that I believe we could gain bipartisan support. I know there has been bipartisan support in the past. That's something that I would be very interested in when it comes to public safety around guns and weapons. But more importantly, I'm really curious about public safety when it comes to street safety and what's happening with our like driving and how with like people riding bikes and walking on our streets. You know, when we think about making St. Louis an inviting place, a welcoming space, our streets and making sure those are safer for people to walk up and down are very important. And I don't know what that looks like. I've been talking to some folks about how come we removed driver's ed from class, like the classroom. Like, I know that it's expensive, but is it more costly to our state to pay out all these lawsuits? Are we not doing our
Wait, hold on a second. You don't have to take driver's ed to get a driver's license in Missouri. I'm from Illinois.
No.
And I had to.
No, you do not.
You do not.
Okay. That is actually something I did not know, but
yeah.
Continue.
So that's what something that I've – so I'm a teacher, right? And I think a lot about how we're educating folks. One, with the legislature, like the reason why there's a lot of apathy around politics is because we've made it kind of hard to understand, and we haven't done a very good job helping people understand it. So when it comes to education and driving and the issues we've been having on the roads lately, it makes me think if – that's a intervention that we could legislate again, and then taking it a step further and how to help our new Americans learn how to drive. And just like there's a lot of there's a lot of public safety asterisk that I think I'm interested in. But as a social worker, it's kind of that hierarchy of needs. Like, do people have housing? Do people have food? Do people feel safe? And then can they actualize their best self?
Well, let's talk about Amendment 3. It passed by, I think, about a little more than 3 percentage points. As we're recording this, there's a court case currently going on. And I hate to predict what judges are going to do, but, like, I think the chances of, like, most of Missouri's abortion restrictions coming crashing down are pretty high. Amendment 3 is not vague or ambiguous about, like, allowing for certain things to stand. Like, I think that lawsuit is ultimately going to be successful. And so that brings up the question about, like, how are Republicans going to respond to this? Like, before I play a clip from incoming Senate President Pro Tem Cindy O'Loughlin, what's kind of your expectations about, like, the GOP response to this passing?
We saw what happened right at the end with the decertifying with Secretary of State Ashcroft. We saw the games that were played with the courts, with the legislature, trying to stop the petition process. I imagine there will be shenanigans. What concerns me the most is how this then changes how we interpret the Constitution, how this changes the will of the people, how it changes democracy. And the people of Missouri voted that they want access to health care. And I hope that the Missouri legislature doesn't undermine the voices of Missourians.
Well, here is incoming Senate President Pro Tem Cindy O'Loughlin responding to a question when I asked, well, you know, this passed. Why don't you just, like, give up and stop dealing with this issue, given that it is now part of the Constitution? This is her exact response.
Well, I mean, I think it's easy to say that if you're a person who's been allowed to be born. I mean, if your life was taken away and you weren't allowed to live and you weren't allowed to engage in any of these conversations, you know, that's just a different perspective. I think that we will look at what has happened and we will be discussing it, and we have a caucus next week and we'll talk about, you know, are there alternatives? What are those alternatives? And how do we go about addressing it?
That is incoming Senate President Pro Tem Cindy O'Loughlin talking with me 2 days after the election. So they probably have already had that caucus meeting. I should just add that. What do you think of her comments there?
It reminds me of when I was growing up in St. Louis Catholic School. Having gone to 12 years of Catholic school, I was a staunch pro-life advocate. I went on marches, I got on buses and went to D.C. and I marched and I carried the signs. And I, too, really believed in defending that, you know, that unborn, if you will, to use the language. And then I grew up some. And I gained more insight into what we're actually talking about here. And we're talking about health care. We are talking about access to life-saving health care. What we're seeing from these extreme abortion bans is people are dying. People are dying all over the place. Children are going to bed without their parent there to tuck them in because they weren't able to access, you know, life-saving care for a miscarriage. If we cared about that child then once they're born, but the state of Missouri, we're not educating our kids. We're reducing, you know, I've got a colleague who wants to take away free lunches from students. There's a real disconnect between what she's saying about that life of the person being born and then how Missouri will take care of and help that child grow up. It's a shame. It's really disappointing that one of our highest leaders in the Senate isn't going to support the will of the people.
I do want to end on, like, I know if both of us or all three of us had the answer to, like, how Missouri Democrats get out of their doom loop, we would not be doing this. We would probably be very wealthy collectively, because this is the same question that's been asked for literally every election cycle since 2012. But I am interested in your thoughts as somebody who has followed probably Missouri Democratic politics for a while. Like, what can be done for them to be on an upward trajectory? Because, like, they had some modest gains in 2022 when it came to the House, but they just stalled out this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to imagine there's a lot of frustration among not only Missouri Democratic, like, political people, but also Democratic voters that they're in this doom loop. So how do you get out of this doom loop?
Karaoke? No. I have been walking into these spaces like this. What's going on? What are we doing here? What's the strategy? What's the plan? Where does Missouri want to be in 50 years? Who are we? What are we doing? And I think that because for the last decade particularly, people have been playing such a hard game of defense, this fresh class energy will help to bring some new fire to the strategy. I can't look away now that I've been, run a campaign and am participating inside in this way. It's very different from being an activist and an advocate and a lobbyist to going to being actually elected. And I can't look away. And so I really think it's a strategy and, in my opinion, hard left. Like, I feel like I'm taking a hard left. We really tried to speak to moderate, middle-of-the-road voters, and that's nationally, too. And I believe that with what I've seen with my new colleagues on the Republican side, I'm a swing left. I'm going to kind of double down in that hard, progressive role. But also, I want to be seen as a resource. And I think we need like a 50-year strategy and vision, and I don't know that there's a plan, but I'm going to keep asking, and if there isn't one, then I want to be part of making one.
Well, we will, when I guess 50 years from now, I'll be 90 years old or something like that, and I will not be doing this.
Oh.
Sorry. Breaking news. I'm not going to work until I'm 90. But on that note, thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to having you back to talk about legislation that you're actually considering and not just speculating. Politically Speaking is a product of St. Louis Public Radio, which is part of the University of Missouri St. Louis. You can read all of our stories about the Missouri legislature and Missouri politics at stlpr.org. And how can people find you on the World Wide Web where you want to be found?
Yes, I can be found on Instagram at lilyforthelou. You can email me at lilyforthelou@gmail.com, or you can contact the House office in House District 80. And one of the wonderful staff members will let me know that you reached out.
Thank you very much. And until next time, so long. Politically Speaking is produced by Sarah Kellogg, Rachel Lipman, and me, Jason Rosenbaum. The show is edited by Fred Ehrlich. Read all of our coverage at stlpr.org. And if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to Politically Speaking by searching the term Politically Speaking on Apple Podcasts. From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.